Good evening. Welcome to the Solaire Report. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this week. Today is Thursday, December 13th, 2018. I'm headed to Philadelphia next week, and I'm really looking forward to seeing some of you in Malvern for our afternoon coffee and tea and snacks on Friday, December 21st. If you still want to sign up, you can. You're going to need to call customer service. I think we've taken it off the homepage. Stay tuned. We're going to have more next week on our Hang with Solaire and Stavoren in March. Ulrich Groniger is going to be there, Bridget Mouchet, who's doing the wellness series, and Robert Duper. More next week. That's right, Christmas is coming, my favorite time of year. We mailed out our holiday greeting today. Check it out. Our donations this year are split between cash gifts to homeless families in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then the other half to the Veterans Community Project in Kansas City, who's building tiny homes for homeless vets. It's a homelessness is something that really I don't like to see happen. And so please do what you can this Christmas and in 2019 to help those in need, whether hungry or homeless, in a manner energizing for you. Always important to do it in a way that's energizing for you. Give the Gift mailing came out after Thanksgiving. It's still open, so we invite you to give a complimentary 60-day subscription to the Solaire Report to the person of your choice. If you go to the Give the Gift blog post on the website, you can see all the information. Just send the name, the address, the phone number, the email address for the person you want to give the gift. The deadline is December 17, 2018, and that's going to give them the whole annual wrap-up, which is going to be, wow, it's going to be a doozy. We also put up a wrap-up gift package for Christmas. You can get three of the latest wrap-ups, and it's wrapped in a Christmas in a burlap bag with a big red Christmas ribbon. So check it out. It's on the webpage. Ask Catherine. I got several requests for gift ideas, and so I posted a commentary, Christmas gift ideas. You can check it out. We also made a really cute video of the short history of candy canes for the culinary food traditions that we'd done 2 years ago, and we republished that. You can find it on the homepage. And we've reissued our 2016 prayer book as a generic prayer book, and they make great stocking stuffers. So we'd be delighted to send you as many as you want. So just call and we'll just send those. Those are complimentary. Remember, there's no money in markets over Christmas, so this is going to be the last money in markets of the year, which is, I have a lot to cover tonight, so it's going to be a long one. You might want to split up listening between 2 weeks. Anyway, but no money in markets. The next money in markets is going to be the first week in January when I'm back with the first part of News, Trends, and Stories with Dr. Farrell. We have a lot to talk about. I will announce the theme for our wrap-up, our annual wrap-up, on December 29th. That's when we publish our cover. And again, we start in the first 2 weeks with News, Trends, and Stories. I'm going to go over to record Dr. Farrell in person, and I'm excited. I'm going to see the organ for the first time. It was going to be delivered when I was there the last time, but then it got delayed. So this is going to be my chance to finally see it in person. If you haven't seen the picture up on the crowdfund website, it's beautiful. You can link from the homepage. Our theme tonight is a serious one. I'm going to issue something I rarely do. I've been saying for many years it's going to slow burn. And then 2 years ago I said, well, anything could happen, but I think it's going to slow burn. I think we're coming into a real major shift. So I'm issuing a 2019 economic and financial storm warning. And it's very important that you are prepared for things to go to the downside, particularly starting in the summer. I think they'll wait until we get taxes in before a real recession or worse hits. But I would not let the swarm on Trump, as entertaining as it is, distract you from watching the deep state consolidation of power. And I just think we're coming into a big change. I thought they might wait until after the presidential election, but I think there could be significant moves in 2019. Either way, between 2019 and the end of 2021, we're in for some very, very big changes. First thing is the deficit is rising, even though we're seeing record tax collections. Remember, the president's strategy was just to grow his way out. It's hard to grow your way out when everybody's fighting and the knives are out like this. But the deficit's rising. It's hit $1 trillion, 5% of GDP. It's just not closing with the expansion as it should be. There are many reasons. Of course, the tax cuts, increase in military spending. If you look at the way the Social Security Trust Fund is integrated in with the budget, of course, the draws on that are rising as they were expected to. And then, of course, there's Medicare and health care. The interest on the national debt as rates rise is growing. And there's real concern, and of course, if I'm right, that there is trillions missing from the federal government and significant securities fraud, and not to forget the money sloshing around from the bailouts. There's a real inflation problem when you're bringing so much back, so many operations and things back into the United States. And I would suggest people, I think the immigration of the high IQ kind is very significant. That can trigger a lot of inflation. The way to solve that, of course, is to have a recession in anything outside of the national security functions. So it's, if you basically slow down everything but the national security state, that will make sure you have plenty of capacity and your prices are cheaper in the national security state. At the same time, we're bringing in a new wave of politicians. We saw 60 freshman congressmen, 60 plus freshman congressmen. It's amazing how many of them support socialism. It's kind of scary. So now that the establishment has stolen all the money, we're going to bring in a new group of people who believe in basically shutting off the opportunity for the little guy to build family wealth or wealth. That's the way it's going to be played. There's going to be real effort to self poverty as fashionable, lower your footprint in the face of climate change. But note, all 60 freshmen socialists, though they may or may not be, were being briefed by the Harvard Corporation. They were all up at Harvard for their education. There's no change. The swamp is stronger than ever. Bill Binney, then, of course, the big issue, of course, is secession in the deep state. If you look at the thumbs up that Trump gave to the Bushies at the funeral, I think clearly there's a deal that's been made there. Bill Binney says there's only 20% chance that the Trump will make the FISA documents public. And basically what he said is that it's the death of democracy. I think it's being generous. I would give it 95-5. I think what Trump is doing is using it, holding it back the way Clinton used the CIA drug memorandum and basically dropped it during the impeachment. He dropped it at the last minute. Actually, they didn't drop it. They put it up on the CIA website. And literally within, I think it was 60 minutes to 24 hours, but just immediately Congress announced it was going to drop the, they're going to go through the impeachment process, but the president wasn't going to be impeached. Basically, what he was saying with that Inspector General report on the CIA drug memorandum is, you take me down, I'll take down everybody. Because both sides were up to their neck in drug dealing, we're going to get back to the MENA drug operation in a second out of Arkansas, because it was basically a partnership between the National Security Council and the Arkansas group under Clinton. Anyway, but if you look at how Clinton used the CIA Inspector General report on the CIA Department of Justice drug memorandum, it was basically a nuclear weapon that stopped the impeachment process. It wouldn't surprise me if Trump is going to hold the FISA documents back for the same purpose, which means it's highly unlikely he'll be impeached. It's one of the reasons they've got the guys in New York now going after him, and that document won't come out. Part of the problem with the succession in the deep state is you're basically fighting over control of the organized crime cash flows, which are very high margin when the economy is this leveraged and you're going through a period of change. Cash is king. I used to have a partner who would say, cash flow is more important than your mother. I don't agree with that, but There's a lot of people who feel that way, particularly at times like this. My question is, we're talking about the president threatening a shutdown in a fight over the wall and how much funding he gets for the wall. Basically, the negotiation is now between $1.6 billion and $5 billion, not enough to build a wall, but to get started. My question is the president trying to put up a wall on the California side so that he and the Bushies can control the corporate and the independent trafficking? It's clear that a wall is not as economic as other ways of using the money. I think everybody clearly agrees on that. I think part of the problem is there are folks very concerned that the wall is not to keep people out, but to keep people in. Remember, we don't know what a reset or a big reengineering would look like next year in 2021. So remember, that wall can go two ways. Trump, as I said, I think has clearly made a deal with the Bushies. You know, we saw him doing Bushy kind of things when he put Powell's comes from the Brady line, which is a Bush line. When he put Powell into the chairmanship of the Fed, then Kavanaugh was a Bush guy. And now, after he gave thumbs up to George W. Bush at the funeral, we see Barr come in as Attorney General, and it clearly gives the Bush faction control of the Department of Justice. Barr insists he won his own deputy. I'm sure the world would be thrilled to see Rosenstein go. Barr was deeply involved in Iran-Contra, and if you don't know the allegations regarding Bush and Clinton on the MENA drug operation, it all revolved around a dealer named Barry Seal, and of course, Tom Cruise has made a movie about it, so it's all there to watch. Terry Reid had a book called Compromised that is sort of what outed Barr in the and as part of the national security and the MENA operation. So don't be surprised to see Iran-Contra and MENA come up somewhere in here. With Barr coming in, it's clear the opposition is trying to move as much as they can to the New York State Attorney General or to Manhattan. We have federal Manhattan prosecutors now saying they're going to investigate the inauguration donations. All of these kinds of sort of using criminal courts and criminal allegations as political war, it just stops your ability to get any work done in Washington. It's a nightmare. I just wanted to quote Senator Inouye, a very famous quote, referring to the company, which is a group of private contractors run out of the National Security Council during the time when Bush and Barr were in there. And I guess Barr came in finally as AG after that, is when Bush became president. Anyway, but Barr was clearly very much a part of this. So anyway, referred to the company as, quote, a shadowy government with its own Air Force, its own Navy, its own fundraising mechanism, and the ability to pursue its own ideas of national interest free from all checks and balances and free from the law itself. My opinion, that about sums it up. If you want to understand what the swarm on Trump is about, I put up on my Twitter feed a wonderful scene from The Gladiator, which is one of my favorite movies, where the other gladiators are worried that they're going to poison the hero, who's a Roman general who's been turned into a slave. They're in the slave quarters. They're gladiators. And they're worried that he's going to be poisoned. So one of the other gladiator tests his food. And then when it turns out he's clean, the second gladiator turns to him and says, you have a great name. Before he kills you, he has to kill your name. And part of what you're seeing is an effort to really destroy Trump's name. Now, the problem with Trump is he's certainly helping. Americans want their president to be presidential. And he's certainly, in some of his recent tweeting in the last 30 days, he's been very childish. And what's interesting is a lot of the stuff that they're trying to make hay with his affairs and various things, I think most people don't care about that. They care about the business of the government. Unfortunately, John Kelly is leaving at the end of the year, chief of staff, someone who was uniformly respected on all sides and seen as a positive influence. Trump's trying to figure out who's going to replace him. He's been talking with Chris Christie, who didn't get along with Kushner, which will be interesting. And some people are saying he should just get Kushner there. Sort of, you can't fire your son-in-law, I think is the idea. Given the legal risks, it's going to be very difficult to have just about anybody. Christie, having been a prosecutor, is someone who could handle the situation, but you need somebody who really understands the in and outs of the legal problems. Here's what you need to know. The most important thing to understand about the Trump swarm is it's a distraction. It's entertainment. If you look at the deep state, they are moving smoothly, steadily, right into building an entirely new federal transaction payment mechanism right in front of us, and we're not even seeing it. It's why all the Q hope porn is, in my opinion, just complete BS. It's interesting. It's very entertaining, but it's just, you know, if you look at they're basically building the whole new infrastructure, and it's a blossoming of the victory of the deep state through the financial coup. So you see all the intelligence agencies into the Amazon cloud. That's done. Now we have the two headquarters by Amazon named, one right next to Langley in the Treasury and the other right next to the New York Fed. What could be more obvious? Then we have Amazon make a big deal with Lockheed, which basically Lockheed Martin is by 50% or more the lead contractor and defense contractor. And that doesn't even include all the weapons it sells the government. So they do a deal with Lockheed on satellites, and all you need is for Amazon to pick up the JEDI contract if they get it. And wow, you know, you've got Amazon ready to be the IT back office for the entire federal government, particularly the parts that J.P. Morgan Chase's depository and the New York Fed don't do. So Lockheed has spun out its IT division that did all the payment systems with all the money that went missing. So they're out of the liability. We know we've had fires at the New York Fed. Presumably they're burning everything up. And J.P. Morgan Chase is flush from the bailouts and the Madoff and running around just, you know, being great statesmen. It's amazing if you can steal $21 trillion, how happy you can be. All we need is DOD to work through their issues to let the JEDI contract out. And I should mention the government had time to pass a new law related to the information systems of the government and the CIO position. The existing CIO left, and we're looking for somebody really big to come in and take that position. So, you know, they are building the entire train tracks of a new, highly streamlined, highly central controlled transactional mechanism that will control all the money in and out. So think of Amazon, Lockheed, JP Morgan Chase, and this new CIO, and the New York Fed is basically, you know, I'm picking on Morgan, they're the lead one, but the other New York Fed member banks are in there too. These are the deep state utilities. They're not in charge, but they're going to be replacing much of the governmental bureaucracy. So if your family income depends on federal government bureaucracy income, you better take a look and figure out what you're going to do, because big reengineering is coming. Part of the distraction is the Trump swarm. Another part of the distraction, which is related, is the culture wars. I mentioned last week that I had written a review of Tucker Carlson's new book on the culture wars, and it does a very good job of showing you how basically the establishment doesn't want you to ask them about where the $21 trillion is or why they engineered a financial coup, and their best way to sort of put us all off stride is to just start screaming about us about how unethical we are because we're not handling our transgender bathrooms correctly, or, you know, any other of the divide and conquer stuff. So it's called projective identification. They attack you for doing what they are in fact doing. And, you know, I dealt with 11 years of it during the litigation, and, you know, and I deal with it off and on again. off and on. So it's very important to see the cultural wars for what they are. It's a tactic. It's a brutal tactic. And you don't want to get caught up in it. You want to see it for what it is and be able to navigate through it. The California fires, in my opinion, are the most important sign we've got of the speed at which they're operating. You know, it's amazing. I keep running into people who think the fires are natural and they're caused by the climate problem. And I respect that. You know, I can't prove that they are engineered, but I think if you look at the photographs and the footage, and the thing that's persuaded me the most are eyewitness reports, either of people I know or people who know people that they know and trust. And so it's just sort of networks of trust sending in firsthand accounts. Anybody who sends me those kind of firsthand accounts, I really, really appreciate it. My other concern is that I think there is a giant sucking sound out of the federal balance sheet connected to these fires. I think there's a lot of money games going on. Just like California is being burned, I think taxpayers are being burned. And crappy mortgage papers being put into FHA, VA, possibly some of the other mortgage funds, even Freddie and Fannie. So it's a way to clean up the Fed balance sheet. They just reported a $66 billion mark-to-market loss. That's a paper loss. It's not realized. And, you know, one of my questions is they going to let that interrupt their dividend to Treasury? It'll be interesting to see if the Fed sort of cuts the cash flow to Treasury while they're angry at Trump. But I think there's a real put to the federal balance sheet. In addition, their disaster recovery funds and all sorts of other monies that are coming out. And there's no doubt there's a desire by many political forces to do high-speed rail in California. So I'm extremely suspicious about the disaster capitalism. And of course, you know, I think there's going to be tremendous land grab, mineral grab, other resource grab. So any information you can send me from just people you trust or that you see, if you're in California, I would appreciate knowing it, because we're going to understand how everybody made money on this by watching the patterns and the of what happens over time. And if you watch closely, ultimately you'll be able to see certainly what the disaster capitalism is, and maybe you may even be able to see if any evidence of who caused the fire and why. It's very interesting. I've tried to understand the Paradise, California occurrence, because it looks like a complete genocide of the whole town. And you wonder why. One of the allegations is there is significant gold and precious metals resources, and that, in theory, could explain it. We've gotten several reports that Paradise is essentially under some kind of military lockdown. But again, I need a lot more anecdotal and sort of individual witness information. So again, anything you can send me, I really appreciate it. And of course, pictures are wonderful. Eyewitness testimony, and a lot of it is what could be very helpful. Whatever is going on in California, again, it's an indication of the aggression of the forces that we're dealing with and the speed at which they're moving and the extent to which they will go. They feel completely free to act, I believe, with impunity above and outside the law. So the question now is going to be, are we in for a reset? Are we in for a coup d'etat? Are we just in for a recession? And what I'm trying to figure out is to what extent, for most household items, is it going to be inflationary or deflationary? It's a big conversation for another day. But at a minimum, you want to be prepared. You want to have thought through scenarios for all three. And you want to be in a place where you can really access fresh water and fresh food. If you look at the continued deterioration in the food supply, it's very significant, given some of the most recent announcements, both about biosludge and lab-grown meat. What could possibly go wrong? As I said to the folks at the Bitcoin conference last year, the smart money's buying land, gold, real assets, Well, sure enough, Bitcoin's now broken through the 3,500 line, and we get big articles in the Wall Street Journal that Harvard has continued to buy land, including in California, and significant water rights. One of the top stories for 2018, when we do news trends and stories in the annual wrap-up, is going to be the fact that Harvard went dark in 2017, Harvard Corporation. In terms of their endowment policies, we've discussed it before, and I'll discuss it again with you in January. But Harvard's going dark, and the U.S. government now, with this new decision to run a secret set of books, is also going dark. It's important to remember that Harvard Corporation is at the very top of the food chain in the deep state, and it has traditionally umbrellaed most, if not all, of the factions. And it's sort of the lead flagship pool of intergenerational capital in many respects in this country. So I think one of the reasons they went dark is they wanted all the internal knowledge that might inform what had happened during the financial coup gone. Let those people cycle elsewhere and be split up, not together. But I don't think they want a lot of people hanging around internally to see profits flowing from disaster capitalism. That could be very dangerous. So, you know, and then of course you need people who are going to need to be suicided. Who needs that? Anyway, but keep an eye on what the Harvard Corporation is doing, because they are core to the group leading to what I call the march towards friendly fascism. So bottom line, I want you to be prepared starting by mid-2019 for number one, recession. Number two, the beginning of radical reengineering of the governmental mechanisms, particularly the federal mechanisms. And with that is going to come a push for privatization from not only at the federal level, but I'm sure it's going to be happening state and local, and even a reset of the currency and the financial system. And it may start in 2019. It may take a couple of years. So I want you to be prepared to rock and roll and live a free and inspired life no matter how it goes. Money and markets. The things that are doing well are cash and cash equivalents. The U.S. dollar now up 5.65% for the year. It hit 6% and came down a little bit today. The long Treasury ETF now down 4.62%. Remember, almost everything down across the board, all asset categories. The intermediate Treasury down almost 1%. The bond aggregate down 1%. Junk down 60 basis points, so 0.6%. Equities, everybody was hoping for a December rally. Didn't happen, but the market went negative, but rallied enough this week to come back. It's S&P is now up 75 basis points for the year. That's not even 1%. You might as well be sitting in cash for all the the flutters you would get staying in the market. Home builders down 24%. Housing is clearly softening. My prediction is the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the Plunge Protection Team, will make sure the S&P is in the black for the year. So the message at the end of the year was U.S. dollar and the S&P were the best place to be. Now, I should say that's only in the paper and securities markets. What we know is the wealthy are buying real assets. It's one of the reasons I wanted to look at the convergence of the real estate market with the stock market in the third quarter wrap-up. If you watch the movie Crazy Rich Asians, the message is where they make their fortune, real estate. Now, real estate in the securities market has underperformed the tech boom for the last 5 years since the bailouts. But if you go back 20 years, REITs have outperformed both gold and S&P. And so there's no doubt in my mind that real estate is going to be one of the ways that people are going to be searching for yield in a world that's still hard to get yield. Rates are rising, but they're not going to anything, which for fixed income investors, I think will be glorious. There's two, if you look at the demographics, it just doesn't argue for skyrocketing interest rates. The European ETF now down 12.72% for the year. Germany down 19.51%. Ugh, that's tough. The developed markets minus North America down 11.14%. Large cap China down 8.71%. The small caps down 15.38%, and emerging markets down 13.7%. It was all looking so glorious at the beginning of the year. Commodity index now down 6.53%. Gold down 5%. Silver down 13.3%. Oil down 9.44%. So basically, other than cash and the S&P, everything is down. Bonds, stocks, commodities, no place to hide. And of course, that's what happens when people take away the punch bowl. And speaking of taking away the punch bowl, we're still waiting for the Fed meeting next week as to whether or not they're going to bump interest rates. The Fed chairman sounding pretty aggressive until just recently, the last couple of days, and now he's sounding less hawkish, and Trump saying he's a good guy. I think it's part of the Bushy deal. Lay off, pal. Give pal a break. Pal is a Brady guy, Nick Brady, who was the Secretary of Treasury and chairman of Dillon Reed when I was there. So Brady was my boss at Dillon Reed. Brady was the Secretary of Treasury that created the Financial Accounting Standards Advisory Board, which has pulled the trick on the missing money and and coming up with a subterfuge as to why a policy board has the power to overrule the Constitution, the financial management laws, and create a set of secret books by a secret group of people and a secret process, and somehow it's supposed to be the law. It wouldn't surprise me. Brady was put in charge of a commission when the market tanked in 1987. His job was to lead something like that. He, having been a Treasury and a member of both the Council on Foreign Relations and the Grove, it wouldn't surprise me if they said, okay, Nick, go figure this out. Run the process, talk to all the guys who ever worked at Treasury and figure out how you're going to handle this. So it wouldn't surprise me if Brady came up with the FASAB cute trick. More on that, in fact, in the annual wrap-up. Anyway, so Powell's a Brady guy, and for some reason Trump decided to lay off him, and it wouldn't surprise me again if that's part of the deal with the Bushies. The European Central Bank came out this week, and announced that they were finishing their bond-buying program this month, and so it's another step to take away the punch bowl. So the Fed is taking away the punch bowl. Now the ECB is going to take the punch bowl away. What they're going to do is, as bonds mature, they're going to reinvest the money. So they're not going to pull down the size of their balance sheet or of their bond position, but they're not going to be buying 15 billion euros a month. And again, big taking away of the punch bowl. They also got a victory from the courts. Their rights to do a bond buying program had been challenged, and the court case this week affirmed their bond buying program. Surprise, surprise, it was probably part of the deal of getting them to stop taking away the punch bowl. Now, when the punch bowl gets taken away, people feel pain, and not surprisingly, we have riots in France. Macron decided that he was going to slap on a gas tax, basically making it expensive for anybody in the rural areas to get to work. But if you look at the last 20 years, a great deal has happened in Europe, same as in the United States, to really drive people into the cities. This one was not even subtle. It was not well done. One of the things that came out was that Henry Kravis was a big backer of Macron to become president. So I tweeted out the chapter 5 from the Dillon Reed story. And, you know, we have it in Spanish and French, so everybody in Europe can read it. Because between English, Spanish, and French, you've basically got most people covered. Macron was filmed walking in the streets, having conversations with people. And it's painful to watch because it proves my point. Those who win in a rigged game get stupid. He really believes that he's in his position because he worked hard and he's talented. And the people who are not in his position just are not that talented and are slackers. And it shows, if you read the different articles about what he said and how he said it, you realize this poor guy just does not have a clue about how the economy really works. Anyway, I thought the conversation in France could certainly be helped by an understanding of how Henry Kravis made his money. If you haven't read the Dylan Reed book, it's very, very useful, especially for any politician who's been backed by Henry Kravis. Part of Macron's problem in a different way is the same one that Trump has, and that is they're trying to treat the presidency of a nation as an entry-level position, and it's sort of a suicidal thing to do. You really do. There's a reason people need to be seasoned up in the positions. Joseph's latest news and views from the Nefarium, his video that he does, VidChat, it's not a VidChat, it's just a talk, has a great opening section on all of Macron's bloopers on the culture issue. It's very, very good if you have time to watch it, and it's fun to watch. Joseph's always fun on culture. Brexit update, Theresa May was able to overcome the vote of no confidence that had been called. Her bid to win EU approval for changes in the Brexit deal failed. That means basically there's no deal, and you're looking at the possibility of a hard Brexit. I don't see how you can bring anything together at this point. Now, what's interesting is I think the reason that May survived the vote is she's got the backing of the Queen. And the reality is, if you look at the London Trading and Derivatives book and their offshore financial system, they must have secrecy and control to protect it and protect all the crazy, dirty paper that's floating around. What you're looking at with what's happening in England is very much part of managing the same book of paper that you're watching in the United States. And it's one of the reasons, if we do get more than a recession next year, I don't see anything starting until the Brexit is done one way or the other, because the Brits have got to have complete control of those floats before the U.S. is going to agree to move, because it's basically a very integrated book, and managing it has to be integrated. So I would say the U.S. and the U.K. are managing their dirty paper together, and whatever is coming, it's not gonna happen if it affects that book of business until both sides are ready to go. We see the tech wars worsening. If you haven't read Unbalanced or AI Superpowers, they're both great background to really understand both the squabbles back and forth on tariffs, as well as what just happened with the arrest and prosecution of the Huawei chief financial officer, who just happens to be the founder's son. If you look at what could happen if China decided to retaliate against business leaders or their assets in China, you know, it's kind of interesting. If this war gets going, we're really in for quite a show. Anyway, I really think that if you're going to follow the tech wars, it helps to read Unbalanced and AI Superpowers. China and America are like two Siamese twins who are attached to each other and deeply codependent, and yet are having an all-out brawl, a fist fight. Imagine a Siamese twins having a fist fight. That's what it looks like. I had a tweet storm this week over Fidelity and BlackRock. If you have been following any of the discussion of the Corey Good, David Wilcox shows on Gaia TV, including a group of aliens they describe as the Blue Avians. Their nickname has become the Blue Chickens, the Blue Chicken Aliens. And I refer to it as the Blue Chicken Alien Op. I just think the whole thing's an op. But the part of the story that interests me is, if you look at Gaia TV is financed, it's a publicly traded stock, and if you look at their proxies over the last 10 years, some of their lead investors recently have been Fidelity and BlackRock, which are two of the biggest buyers and managers in the markets, including of treasury. So why are two of the biggest investors and treasuries in the world financing the blue chicken alien op? Makes you wonder. You have Larry Fink, CEO of BlackRock, who's also a member of the board of directors of the Council on Foreign Relations, writing letters to CEOs and telling them that they ought to think more long-term and sustainable, and promoting ESG investing. And you want to say, well, Larry, why are you financing the blue chicken alien op? So you're perfectly willing to buy hundreds of billions of dollars of treasury securities from an issuer who won't produce financial statements or obey the laws related to financial management, but you're perfectly willing to finance the blue chicken alien op. What's that about? Disinformation has increasingly turned into the most significant job program in the United States. Now, it's always been very significant. I believe there's a great deal of your taxpayer dollar, which is paid to pay, or is used to pay corporate contractors to spend a great deal of time designing software and programs to troll the internet and basically do what the Russians are being accused of doing on the 2016 election. But it's basically designed to control the conversation and to control and stop people from sort of getting together and sharing the truth. If you look at the secret space program process that came together around the conferences in 2014 and 2015, you had a lot of serious research coming together, sharing information, and things were really, there was tremendous momentum. And then, of course, the blue chicken op, alien op, plopped right down in the middle of it. It was a little bit like pouring saltwater taffy into a Ferrari engine. But it is always amazing to me the extent to which they will pay literally billions of dollars to run massive disinformation campaigns on a wide variety of subjects. It's just amazing. And the extent to which they've got the entire media networked and on the payroll is, you just can't believe it until you experience it. It took me 11 years of dealing with them on the housing bubble and mortgage fraud during my litigation to realize how extensive it was. And I couldn't understand at first because I couldn't fathom, and I explained this in the Dylan Reed book, I couldn't understand why would you spend all this money? I estimated they'd spent $45 million over the 11 years on everything from the various forms of investigation and litigation to, we had 24/7 surveillance and harassment. It was very, very expensive. And now you can do a lot more with AI and software, but then it was pretty human intensive. And I kept wondering, why would you spend all this money when you can just kill me and you'd save all that money? And I started to realize, well, one, this creates lots of contracts for the corporate contractors. They make a lot of money doing it. But the other thing is, it's so important to them to look good, to look like they have the rule of law. Part of keeping the red button from being pushed is that everybody gets a story of I am good. So it's really important. Just as I said that you need to kill Trump's name before you can kill Trump, it's the same thing. The appearance of the rule of law is worth a fortune if you look at the leverage it produces in the financial markets. So whether it's sort of giving everybody the story of I am good so they'll feel good about not pushing the red button and basically running the world's largest, machinery engaged in both war, organized crime, and control. So they need that story of I am good, and they need the appearance of the rule of law. Clearly it's wearing thin, and the games are wearing thin, but the extent to which they're pouring down disinformation tells me that you can smother it only for so long. They're going to need anywhere from recession to reset, they're going to need something big to keep a lid on it. The extent to which the disinformation has gotten just mind-boggling is HBO has come out with a new piece that ran on Sunday called Panic, the Untold Story of the 2008 Financial Crisis. I tried to get, I don't, I don't have a TV. I don't have HBO. So I tried to see if I could get it online. I couldn't. And I'm sure they're going to repackage and I'll be able to get it eventually. But I did watch the previews and some of the different bits that they offered in the webpage. And it's so bad, you don't even know what to say. It gets back to Macron and all these other folks. People who win in a rigged game get stupid. And all the mind control, all the spin, all the disinformation, it's making the leadership as stupid as the people that they're trying to manipulate. It's kind of funny the way it's worked. But it's a perfect example that if you're going to produce the story of I am good, you know, the story of I am good to keep the red button from getting hit is designed to take the moral pain out of everybody doing dirty. So the story doesn't need to be true. It doesn't even need to be believable. It just needs to do a good job of pretending. And then everybody can make money on genocide and the financial coup and sleep well at night. It's sort of like the Q-op. In the meantime, a very new development. We have the Senate voting this week to end U.S. participation in the Saudi-led war in Yemen. I mean, how long did that take? But thank God it came. And then unanimously approving a measure blaming the Saudi Arabian crown prince for the killing of the journalist Khashoggi. So a loss for Pompeo and Trump on that one. Trump's concern was to keep the arms sales going because they've got big, big arms sales with the Saudis, which was a great sort of achievement. And it just underscores the extraordinary U.S. dependency economically on global arms sales. So interesting move by the Senate. I wanted to point out, I put the article up in News Trends and Stories this week. The Japan Diet has passed legislation to permit water privatization. The idea being they need a lot of capital for their different municipal water systems. So they're going to let private companies, global companies, come in and recapitalize and take those systems private. This is unbelievably dangerous, but it shows you what happens when you get in a major debt squeeze. And there's no doubt the Japanese were in a major debt squeeze before Fukushima, and with Fukushima, they're really in a debt squeeze. Then you add now the push for military spending, and things are tight. So it's a little bit the same situation we're dealing with here in Flint, Michigan. We have a real problem with water systems throughout the country, and it's going to be used to push privatization. And all I can say is beware, beware, beware. We don't need to privatize. We can create municipal corporations and raise equity capital, have local shareholders and board members hire and fire the corporate contractors the way they do in China. The local guys keep control with the A-share. I have a lot of information up at Solari on the A-share, B-share model. But beware, because I think part of whatever this big reset is, as I told you, you need the corporations making a lot more money in North America. The way they're going to do that is basically rig profits to the government for piratization. I do have to say a couple things about fighting political squabbles exercised through the courts. We now have the chairman of Nissan in Japan indicted, still in prison, and the company apparently indicted. And so the Japanese, forget buying or selling a company. They're just asserting control through the enforcement mechanisms. I just want to note two items on the continuing Mueller special investigation. Michael Cohen was sentenced this week, and there's lots of talk about that and what kind of information he may have transferred. He was the president's personal attorney. The more interesting one to me is that the judge in the Flynn rule, rather than just accepting the Flynn and Mueller deal, started to ask questions. Because if you look at what Comey has said publicly about their interview of Flynn and the handling of the case, it stinks to high heaven. Sullivan was a judge who was burnt very badly or saw the bad behavior of the Department of Justice in the Senator Stevens case. He's written about it. He understands how corrupt the Department of Justice can be. And so he's digging in and asking questions. And this could be real trouble for Mueller. And I hope it could be real trouble for Comey, because the FBI stinks to high heaven on this one. It's a very interesting development. Let's see what comes out. But I would love to see Comey and Mueller nailed for this. What they did was, I can't imagine it wasn't criminal. It's interesting. Binney got the Department of Justice to back down because he threatened them with malicious prosecution. But I think the time has come for a tsunami of lawsuits brought against the Department of Justice for malicious prosecution. No country can function this way. So this whole model of playing politics with criminal and civil indictments and civil money penalties, the whole model needs to get thrown out. I did want to mention one quote again. This is often brought up when people say, oh, you know, our problems are the climate, while planes are spraying heavy metals overhead, like it's some kind of natural thing. I want to just read you a quote from U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen, who was at a conference on terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, at the U.S. Strategy at the Georgia Center in Athens, Georgia, in 1997. So this was the Secretary of Defense in 1997 during the Clinton administration. Here's what he said. Quote, there are some reports, for example, that some countries have been trying to construct something like an Ebola virus, and that would be a very dangerous phenomenon, to say the least. Alan Toffler has written about this in terms of some scientists in their laboratories trying to devise certain types of pathogens that would be ethnic specific to that, so that they could just eliminate certain ethnic groups and races. And others are designing some sort of engineering, some sort of insects that can destroy specific crops. Others are engaging even in an eco type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. So let me say this again. Remember, this is the Secretary of Defense in 1997. 1997 is 20 years ago. Let me read this again. Others are engaging even in an echo type of terrorism whereby they can alter the climate, set off earthquakes, volcanoes remotely through the use of electromagnetic waves. Got to take that very seriously. I would take that quote as very, very serious. I had an email back and forth with Saker, who was very concerned that we are moving much closer to war with Russia. He's very, very concerned. And he encouraged me to read Professor Stephen Cohen's new book on that very topic. So I've ordered it, and I want to talk about that more in News, Trends, and Stories. But I put some of my responses to Saker in the notes for this Money in Markets. Our hero this week is the Elizabeth Blackburn, who was the Nobel Prize winner for her research on telomeres. You can read her quote in the commentary. She was Bridget's choice. It's because it's Wellness Week. British is choosing both the movies and the heroes. And let's go to the movies. We have two presentations. The first is Raymond Francis, How to Get Well, Stay Well, and Never Be Sick Again. The second is Charlotte Gershon, who was Dr. Max Gershon's daughter, is his daughter. And it's called Live Foods for Winning Energy Without Drugs. Both are, I find, very inspiring. Now, I should just say, I'm a Weston Price person, so I believe in eating meat and dairy, and I agree with the Weston Price folks. That's the healthiest diet. But some people are much happier as vegetarians, and Francis and Gershon are promoting a vegetarian kind of diet. So I had one person say, wait a minute, you know, I disagree with this. Now, my attitude is these are both very inspiring people. They care tremendously about helping other people be healthy, and they have a lot of good information, and you're smart enough to figure out whether or not, or what the system is that works for you. Everybody's unique. Each person has to find what is uniquely good for them. So, but I would encourage you. I found them unbelievably inspiring. I think they're both great people. Our interview tonight is Bridget Mouche for the Wellness Series interviewing Dr. Skull, Vesna Skull, on longevity. And I just loved it. I'm very excited that Bridget is doing the Wellness Series because I continually found myself spending a great deal of time trying to prepare an interview or find the right expert and really deciding that I didn't have the background or expertise to achieve the level of excellence I wanted. I really needed somebody who was focused on this area and who could dig out and get the really best of the best. And I'm just thrilled that Bridget is doing this because I think both we need the information. In both interviews she's done, I've picked up some amazing tips of things I hadn't thought of or really hadn't focused that I could do. And anyway, so I picked up a lot of good tips. But the other thing is just listening to people who are this passionate about helping us be well, I find always inspiring and really gets me thinking, yeah, I could do this. I can do more. Let's go. The one thing I did want to say, Dr. Skull is enthusiastic about DNA testing. I'm very concerned about privacy issues. I don't think there is such a thing as getting testing in the United States and having the information be private. So if you're going to do this kind of testing, particularly for kids, anybody who, if that information, you know, I'll be blunt, I think a lot of the medical records that occurred with Obama has put kids in danger of some of the shooting in Chicago. I think there's organ harvesting going on, and I'm concerned about it. So I'm very concerned about the privacy issues, and you need to think about that. And it's a real argument for finding offshore medical services and getting your tests in places where you can be a lot more confident about privacy. But bottom line, great interview, great presentations. The Wellness Series is something I'm very, very excited about. Ask Catherine. Dear Catherine and team, so happy to see MSM publicity at last regarding the missing money. It's a long time coming. Thank you so much. I assure you what we're watching is massified, modified hangouts. They're so insulting and they're so bad and it's just painful to watch. So, you know, I try to just turtle forward, but we're watching a lot of efforts to smother the, you know, tee up the story and then kill it. They continue, I've been reading a lot lately about BDS and AIPAC affiliates, and I'm so disgusted with the Israel lobbies. Pelosi, Schumer, and all the rest have been sending billions to Israel and defense contractors. It's the Republicans, too. It's not just Pelosi and Schumer. While they can't be bothered with single payer on housing for the homeless or food for the hungry or clean water and safety from lead in all its forms, there's something strange going on. Very strange. Oh, yes, there is something very strange going on. There is a religious-like fervor to Schumer and Pelosi declaring their allegiance to Israel. It's not just them. It's the Republicans. It's Trump. It's everybody. If you haven't listened to my interview with Cynthia McKinney last year, she goes into this in depth, and so I would encourage you to do it. There's a petition link in this article, and she points to the ACLU materials. I've tweeted that out and posted that, so yes. They're trying to pass legislation that would criminalize boycotts of Israel. It's so frightening. You just can't believe that it's happening. This is not the first time states have been legislating the same things, including on acceptance of disaster recovery funds. So you had Texas, Maryland, and some other states who literally, if you accepted disaster recovery funds, one of the stipulations in the contract you signed was you couldn't, you could never boycott Israel. It was, but I will say this, and this is what I discussed with Cynthia when I recorded her in 2017. We need to outlaw dual citizenship for Congress and top federal positions. It's a serious conflict of interest. And we should also outlaw the pledges, I think, the signed pledges that are AIPAC tries to require. So yeah, it's a real problem. And one of the parts of the problem is if you don't do what they say, they turn on the shriek-o-meter. And that's why I think it's so important that we find a way to build our immunity as a population to the shrieker meter. We need to be able to stand up break through the Shrika meter and not let it have the power that it has. Dear Catherine, in your last report, you mentioned that the build-out of airports in terms of shopping and restaurants in what can only be described as malls had been embarked upon well before 9/11, and that you wondered how all this was to be financed until it became obvious after 9/11. I don't understand the connection and wonder if you would elaborate. Thanks, as always, for the valuable information I gleaned from the Solari presentations and website. The reason is, if you look at what they were building before 9/11, nobody's going to drive to the airport to go shopping. That's just not going to happen, especially if the shopping requires that you go through the security gate before you can really start to shop. So the question was, how are you going to get people to hang out in the airport 2 and 3 hours before their flight? You know, before 9/11, you'd go to the airport and you wouldn't spend a lot of time at the airport waiting for your plane. You'd get there, you know. Now with the security lines and what's happening, you have to get there 2-3 hours ahead of time. So now people are spending the 2 hours you need to justify those kinds of mall-like conditions. Well, how did they know in the early 90s when they designed out and funded and did all the construction? How did they know over that 10-year period that in 10 years people were going to suddenly double, triple, and quadruple the time they were spending at airports? So they knew that the hours were going to that the average traveler was going to significantly increase the time that they spent waiting for their flight. So that's 9/11 had a very dramatic impact on how much time I spend in airports waiting for the flight. The EPA has quietly approved the use of biosludge, human septic waste, on our crops. Please share this enlightening link with your subscribers. And they sent a film. My understanding is that this is very bad. So we see a couple very bad things happening. We see biosludge, we see lab-grown meat, and now there's talk about irradiation happening to organic food when it's not supposed to. We have a group of people investigating it. We're trying to figure out that. They've emailed and said they're trying to figure it out. I think I mentioned their one of the emails last week. Please find local sources of people you know and trust, farmers, ranchers, gardeners, farmers markets. What is happening to the general food supply is very, very scary. Hi, Catherine. I'd love to know if you've been following this. It's quite a ride over here in crypto world. Certainly some hope of change in my humble opinion. I hope you are well. Thanks for all your diligent work in this space. Then it was a story. There is an organized campaign against us, says Tet. I haven't followed, but if there's an organized campaign, it wouldn't surprise me because we're clearly in the dump part of a pump and dump, and it makes a lot of sense. But I just don't know anything about it. It's fascinating. I just haven't had time to look at it. And if you have any articles that you recommend, please feel free to send them. Hi, Catherine. I believe someone with your concern for humanity and for bringing truth and integrity to government, the corporate world, will find this information vital. And again, the movie, I think Mike Adams made it on biosludge, and I intend to watch it. And I've asked Harry to educate me some more about it. In your opinion, will the next economic downturn here in the United States be more severe, less severe, or about the same as the last one we experienced? I think it will be less severe for big banks, more severe for the middle class and poor, and most small business. That's why it's very important that you use scenarios to plan, because these things could go many different ways. We're going to be redoing the scenarios for the annual wrap-up. And I think it's very important that you're prepared for a 50% chance or better for recession starting after taxes are due and Brexit is accomplished. And then more than a recession, really a radical reengineering of the federal government in the United States, pressure on state and local governments to privatize and do more radical change, and even a global reset. We keep hearing allegations about a global reset, but it could happen. Then somebody sent me a link to an interview with Axway OSI Group, etc. The I didn't listen to it. My experience with that source is they're not reliable. You can find nuggets. My challenge now is if you look at the amount of stuff that's just pouring out, I don't have the time I need to listen. If I wanted to listen to all the really high integrity sources with great information, I don't have enough time to listen to those. And so I'm steadily becoming pickier and pickier about what I will listen to, just because it's a time squeeze. Hi, Catherine. Thanks again for another brilliant interview with Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe. My question is, in your travels around the world, particularly in the five-eyed countries, what sort of person do you find who has the healthiest attitude to climate change? Religious folks, small to medium business owners, or any other category you can identify? This is tricky because what I find is open-minded people are everywhere. And the question is, how do we find each other? And I think you want to find each other through networks that are sort of grouping and attracting open-minded people. So if Soleri has a lunch or dinner in Sydney, you're in Australia, you know, come and just meet them. I find the food and health networks are great. So Weston Price has a lot of circles and networks, certainly around the United States. I don't know how much they have in Australia, but the Weston Price equivalent there. So health, nutrition, vaccine has caused a lot of people to have to open their minds. You know, once you dig in and understand how serious the problems are in vaccines or areas like that, so chronic fatigue, other, they start to realize, well, wait a minute, if the world is so upside down in this, it must be upside down in lots of different areas. And so you can find some pretty open-minded people. But I think you need to find those networks, because you can't divide it up according to religion or what they do. Clearly, if they have an independent source of income, reliable source of income, they're freer to sort of speak their mind. Next question. You had me under the Q population is being prepared to attack. You had me until the Q population is being prepared to attack. Attack what? The Q population, which may include President Trump, is being prepared to survive the last gasp of the deep state. Okay, so the deep state is getting stronger every day. And if you look at what the deep state is up to, they are moving steadily for a massive reengineering of the federal government and possibly the financial system. I don't see them in last gasp state whatsoever. They just took off with all the bailout money and the $21 trillion. I just don't see that. I would suggest, Catherine, that you seek out the Q population near you and learn firsthand what they are all about. I have. You know, I talk to people who believe in, I know some very smart people who believe the Q material. And, you know, I regularly try and check and see what they're saying. And what I'll tell you is, you know, in my opinion, what they're doing is they're organizing the people who are mad about the corruption and getting them positioned to help them take out a lot of the expendable financial coup players. When you have a financial coup, you end up with many, many players who are good at doing financial coups you don't need anymore. So you throw them overboard. And one of the ways you throw them overboard is you use throwing them overboard to affirm the credibility of the system. And you use the crowd that is angry, the lynch mob, to come help you kill them because they have a lot of knowledge and they can be hard to get rid of. And so you kill two birds with one stone. You get the people who've been hurt by the corruption and really, really angry, you organize them and then manipulate them to help you get rid of the people you want to get rid of. So I think the Q op is a combination of what I would call hope porn and sort of organizing to help the deep state get to the next level. So basically you end up working for the deep state. I think that's what it's about. And I would love to be proven wrong. I would absolutely love to be proven wrong on that one, but I don't think I am. I'll make a note to talk more with Farrell about it in when we do news trends and stories. Having listened to Catherine's recent interviews and thinking about IQ, China 105, Hong Kong 108 versus US 98, what are a couple of things we can do now to boost our IQ? Maybe an example for developing kids and for the 40-plus crowd, food policy, getting rid of glyphosate, gut microbiome, critical thinking, etc. I wish this issue was escalated in the news. Could be part of Be Best. This is an excellent question, and I sent it to Bridget and said, could you do something in the wellness series about this? I think it's an excellent and very, very important question. And it's the kind of question where we really need serious. I would love to have serious, honest scientists who've investigated and know the best research on this topic. Dear Catherine, I would love to see someone from the national media that gets a lot of mass attention to an article that gets huge distribution covering the dangers of 5G. And then they go on about how wonderful this would be. I think you need to understand that in a war, you never ask or beg the enemy for help, and they're not going to help you. You can spend the rest of your life begging your enemy to help you, and the minute you need your enemy to help you, you are lost. So part of this is we need to find a way to spread the information virally without the national media. I mean, they're not reliable. And then you keep talking, basically, who can we go to? Has anyone started a lawsuit? I will say this, the group that Michael Blancham, who did the 5G interview, I posted, if you look at that interview, I posted the petition that he and his group was part of. My understanding from the people in New Mexico is that group has been phenomenally effective, and they certainly got smart meters slowed down in New Mexico. So I would check in with them and see what they're doing and see how you can help. I think there's, you say you don't want to be an activist anymore, and I certainly can, I certainly understand that you're not in a position to do that. But there are great people like Michael who are doing great things, and you can help them. So my suggestion is to check in with them. We just had last week or 2 weeks ago a subscriber write in about 5G, and we're going to publish that commentary. She gave me permission to publish it. I read it last week, but we're going to publish it tomorrow. Then somebody else sent some information from the another website, and it's a website that's saying that, Catherine Austin Fitz defends the senior executive service. Here comes Harry Blaser and Catherine Austin Fitz protecting the senior executive service as usual. The senior executive service, or SES level, is the top level in the bureaucracy. It's the American equivalent of mandarins. Bill Binney was not SES because he's technical, so I think it's STS or something like that, but it's the technical equivalent of SES. And in my experience, the SES are by and large quite fantastically talented and capable people. To work your way up to that level, you got to be really good in the federal bureaucracy. Anyway, so that's what the SES is. It's basically the Mandarin class of the federal government bureaucracy. So they said, what is your position on the SES as a member? The only time I've worked in the federal government, I was the Assistant Secretary of Housing, FHA Commissioner, and the FHA Commissioner, that position is not an SES position. It's a political appointee position. I think they call it a POS. So I've never been an SES. And that source, that's just factually not correct. The reason that Harry and I are doing a series on the deep state is so that you can understand it. What we've discovered over the last year, many different website sources use that term, but most people don't have a really deep understanding of the deep state and all of its complexity. And it's very important that you do. So Harry and I, after much talking about this, decided we would do a series on the deep state. And to understand the deep state, you really have to go back in history. And so we just published last week part one. And I would suggest you listen to that and all the others that we're going to come out with. And I think it will be really helpful. If you're in a hurry and say, I want it right now, read the books we suggest in part one, particularly Prouty and Talbot. And if you really read Prouty's book on the assassination and Talbot's book on, it's a biography of Dulles, but by the time you get to the end, in my opinion, it is the single best book on the Kennedy assassination. Anyway, if you read those and listen on top of it to my speeches at the Secret Space Program, if you listen to Farrell Dolan at FITS at Secret Space Program 2014, I think you'll have a pretty good idea of who the deep state is. And ask yourself the question, who can steal $21 trillion and get away with it? If you look at the capacity it takes to do that, you need a lot more than just the right SES position people or bureaucrats. You need, I think at this point, I think the CIA is 70% corporate contractors, DOD is 50% corporate contractors. You need the New York Fed member banks, you need Treasury, you need all the IT contractors. So, you know, you need JP Morgan Chase, you need Citibank, you need Lockheed Martin. You need quite an infrastructure. It goes way beyond the bureaucrats that you have in place. You know, the CIA is on a leash. The SES and the bureaucracy is on a leash. You know, they're all financed through the New York Fed. Whenever I hear this theory, the SES or the deep state, I think I can imagine sitting around at the New York Fed hearing everybody laugh about that. Well, we got away with that one. It's going to be easier to piratize the government if we can get everybody to believe that the SES is the enemy. Let's kill them. So instead of it being 70% corporate contractors and 50% corporate contractors at CIA and DOD, you can take it up to 99% corporate contractors. Whee! Okay, coming up. This is the last 2 weeks of December, and what we do every year in the last 2 weeks of December is we have best of. So next week is the wrap-ups. The wrap-ups are our best stuff. We have a powerful collection in 2018, first pensions, then space-based economy, then the rise of the Asian consumers in megacities. So this will be a great chance, if you haven't gotten a chance to digest all the wrap-ups, to go back and avail yourself of that material. Then the last week of December, we'll do our four favorites, because there's so many favorites this year, but four of the favorites we've picked out to have the best of the weekly interviews and the special Solari reports. We have a whole series of interviews from Europe that are going to be published as special reports throughout both the holidays in January, a Thomas Meyer, Dr. Catherine Horton, and two more that are quite interesting. On December 29th, the last weekend before the annual wrap-up comes out, we will roll out the annual wrap-up cover with the big theme, which you'll see when comes out December 29th. And of course, we'll come out with news, trends, and stories with Dr. Farrell in the first 2 weeks. We'll have Hero of the Year, Movie and Documentary of the Year, all available when we publish in the first week of January. And then the scenario plans, which I think 2019 strategic planning, please set time aside to do that. It's very important this year. And of course, we'll have our equity overview. The big theme will go at the end of the month. So this is our last Money in Markets of 2018. My next one will be in the first week of Malvern. Of course, I'll see some of you in next Friday in Malvern. I'm very much looking forward to that. For those of you who will not be there, I hope you have the finest of holidays and a very Merry Christmas. We are in cahoots to have a free and inspired 2019. Until I speak with you again, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.